3. Welcome to In the Studio. For three decades now, the first-person stories of and by the greatest rock musicians in history. I'm Redbeard, your conductor on this rock and roll train. And today, it's the genius behind Quadrophenia, Pete Townsend. Seen the movie, watched the theatrical production, read the book. Now, Pete Townsend joins us in the studio for part one of the ultimate box set of The Who's Quadrophenia.
The whole business of being young is only important because one is soon going to be old. You know, it's like a, you know, the transition, the rite of passage between adolescence and adulthood is in itself something that can never be generalized, can never be universalized. It's an absolutely subjective, private, unique journey that every individual goes on. You'll all see I'm the one. What I tried to demonstrate in Quadrophenia is that despite the fact that this boy is trying to lose himself in the mass of people that surround him, he can't do it. Everywhere he turns, he finds himself, and in the end, he has to accept himself. And I can see that this is me, and I will be. You'll all see I'm the one. Hi, this is Pete Townsend in the studio for Quadrophenia, The Who's 1973 album.
The Who's double album, Quadrophenia, was originally released in the United Kingdom on October 26, 1973, a week later here in the States. But due to a vinyl shortage caused by the OPEC oil embargo, only a limited number of copies actually got to stores before production was halted. Most British Who fans couldn't get a copy until after the Who tour was over. Nevertheless, the album went to number 2 on the charts on both sides of the Atlantic. Following enormous successes, Tommy and Who's Next, Quadrophenia was the third jewel in Pete Townsend's triple crown of compositions. Richie Unterberger, writing in the All Music Guide, states, quote, "If anything, Quadrophenia was a more ambitious project than Tommy, given the added weight by fact that The Who weren't devising some fantasy, but were re-examining the roots of their own birth and mod culture. Some of Townsend's most direct, heartfelt writing is contained here, and production-wise, it's a tour de force, one of The Who's most powerful statements," Unterberger concludes about Quadrophenia. So after Tommy's international acclaim as the first successful rock opera, and Who's Next coalescing from the unrealized Lifehouse project, I asked Pete Townsend if there were external pressures applied to continue writing in the rock opera format when he sat down to compose for Quadrophenia.
No, there was no pressure. In fact, there was probably pressure to do exactly the opposite. I think right the way down the line, you know, managers, record chiefs, various people in the band have been trying to get me to keep it simple. Certainly a lot of critics have tried to steer me away from the conceptual work that I do. So there's been a lot of pressure in the other direction, and I think although it may not have been quite so concerted as it is today, I've never listened to it, quite obviously. I've never doubted the fact that which has been clear to me, which is that I'm a storyteller as well as a songwriter, and that the story that I tell and the area in which I work as a songwriter in pop music is very, very clearly defined. My brief is very, very clear. I'm very lucky to have the brief that I do. It's a geographical brief. It's confined to a particular part of London and the occupants of that London. I happen to be fairly close to it today, in the Shepherd's Bush, Hammersmith, that kind of area which I grew up in and where The Who began their career. My brief goes back to, you know, to 1963, you know, a bunch of kids coming up to me after a concert and electing me their spokesman. And I mean, that's basically what happened. And I took the job. And I think that Quadrophenia was just about as close as I ever got to really, really dealing with the exactness of that brief. The feeling that what they got from music, that what they got from fashion, that what they got from each other was something of spiritual value, was something that I felt I had to try to tackle. It's a big, big idea, I think. Can you see the real me? Can
asked the late bass player of The Who, John Entwistle, how the music critics initially reacted to Quadrophenia.
I guess they said ambitious, sort of, what the hell is it? One of those things. I mean, they really weren't sure what was happening. It was a little ahead of its time. I'd say about 4 or 5 years ahead of its time, and people were just surprised to hear something like that. You know, I mean, I played some of the best bass I've ever played on the thing, so I was really happy with it. But and the real me was like take number one, and I was taking the Mickey out of the song. You know, I was just playing whatever I wanted to play, and we kept coming back to it. You know, we did a few more takes, we kept coming back to it, and it ended up as a bass solo. With vocals.
We'll be right back.
Upon its fall 1973 release, it was assumed by some that Quadrophenia was conceived as a screenplay, probably because The Who's earlier rock opera Tommy had by then been made into a film, and also because Quadrophenia included an elaborate booklet of high-quality photos of scenes depicted in the story. Here's composer Pete Townsend.
I knew that I was writing for The Who, and I knew that I was trying to write something that would work well in concert. And I was very much writing for this band that had had such success with Tommy. So I was looking at trying to both provide the band with a good concert vehicle, as Tommy had been for us for such a long time. And I've never been particularly interested in film, so I don't suppose I cared very much that it would one day be made into a film, like Tommy was later made into a film. I was 27 years old, and I was in this band, and I was trying to create musico-dramatic works for The Who.
The only earth.
studio in our 30th anniversary year on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Pete Townsend for Quadrophenia Part 1.
Hi, this is Pete Townsend in the studio for Quadrophenia, The Who's 1973 album. I was confident that I'd achieved a similar aim, but you know, in a slightly different way with Tommy. It was hugely successful and universally acclaimed, so I had no difficulty with the fact that I knew that I could do it. It was more precise, it was more real, it was more tangible. This is a story of real people. Jimmy is very much the composite of a bunch of kids that I know by name, that I grew up with in my neighborhood, and that I know are not me and are not like me. I am not like Jimmy in the story of Quadrophenia. You know, I am very clear about my role here as a writer, as somebody that has observed the rite of passage that a group of young people went through. You know, I didn't grow up. I stayed in a rock and roll band and was allowed to stay young until it was just until the mirror belied the truth. You know, the fact for me was that I saw that a lot of people had gone through this, you know, this fashion movement called the mod movement. You mustn't forget, had an incredibly strong and very dignified and esteemed musical background, you know, mainly black music, black dance music, but Tamla Motown, Memphis and New Orleans music as well, and was rooted in itself in an appreciation of modern jazz and very, very high Parisian left bank idealism, that this fashion movement, which, you know, we call, you know, modism, which is modernism, the mods, has become like a kind of a coffee table chuckaway idea that accompanies stupid photo shoots that magazines come up with every now and again, and is particularly misunderstood in the USA, I think. I think the word mod over there means mop-top haircuts and paisley trousers or something. I mean, it's nothing like that at all. It's a much more severe style.
Every year is the same, and I feel it again. I'm a loser, no chance to win. Leaves start falling, come down is calling. Loneliness starts sinking in. But I'm one. I'm one. And I can see that this is me. And I will be. You'll all see I'm the one. Those blue jeans, faded, patch secrets so tight. Where do you get that walk oh so lean? Your shoes and your shirts all just right. I'm one. I am one. And I can see that this is me, and I will be. You'll all see I'm the one. I got a Gibson without a case, but I can't get that even tanned look on my face. Ill-fitting clothes, and I blend in the crowd. Fingers so clumsy, voice too loud. But I'm one. I am one. And I can see that this is me. And I will be. You'll all see I'm the one.
Possibly the most daunting aspect of composing a successful magnum opus is where to start. So to do so requires developing a point of view. Pete Townsend reveals a device he employed in composing Quadrophenia.
I used a technique which is quite common in serious music called leitmotif, where you give your characters a music theme. And I gave each of the four facets of Jimmy's personality a musical theme. I wrote songs that related to those musical themes, and then I started to develop. So I had four songs, essentially, to start with, and then I started to develop the story of his journey through his day or through the couple of days that in which the story is set, and it grew organically. I was very clear that, you know, that I had to do this because I felt I was the only person that could do it, and I think what I'm doing today with it is going back and looking at it and thinking, God, you know, it's still as relevant today as it ever was. You know, this, the whole business of being young is only important because one is soon going to be old. You know, it's like a, you know, the transition, the rite of passage between adolescence and adulthood is in itself something that can never be generalized, can never be universalized. It's an absolutely subjective, private, unique journey that every individual goes on. And what I tried to demonstrate in Quadrophenia is that despite the fact that this boy is trying to lose himself in the mass of people that surround him, he can't do it. He can't lose himself. Everywhere he turns, he finds himself. And in the end, he has to accept himself. There begins, you know, another story, which is the story of Jimmy as a spiritual being. And that's the way that the play ends. And I'm very, very proud of it. I think it's a really good piece.
I see a man without a problem. I see a country always starved. I hear the music of a heartbeat. I walk and the people turn and laugh.
Oh,
without a problem.
An overlooked gem from Quadrophenia called Is It In My Head, featuring a terrific vocal from Roger Daltrey and some really tasty guitar by Pete Townsend. Even though Quadrophenia quickly shot to number 2 on the sales charts in both the US and the UK immediately by December 1973, the album took a critical drubbing by several prestigious music critics, particularly in America. Pete Townsend wasn't shaken, but he was stirred.
You know, I think there are still a few people out there that maybe it's not a question of them not getting it, but that don't feel that this is an appropriate activity to be carried on in rock and roll. And you know, I have to just either take issue with that idea or just say, well, okay, you know, I'm not doing it within rock and roll. You know, review me somewhere else in your pages. Review me on the fashion page. Review me on the gardening page. I don't care where you review me. I don't care, really, if you review me. I certainly don't care if you give me a bad review. And in fact, one of the greatest critics of Quadrophenia, who I think wrote in his biography of The Who, Before I Get Old, was Dave Marsh, who's, you know, lifelong friend of mine and somebody that I respect hugely. And I didn't really feel that his criticism was in any sense unfounded. I think it was absolutely accurate in his own terms. It's just that it seemed to me that we were asking different things of this music that we love so much. And I think that's healthy, isn't it?
Follow In the Studio in our 30th anniversary year on Facebook at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. Roger Daltrey of The Who joins Pete Townsend next in the studio for Quadrophenia Part 1.
Hi, this is Pete Townsend in the studio for Quadrophenia, The Who's 1973 album.
And I'm Redbeard for Part 1 of our look at Quadrophenia. I asked Pete Townsend if he wrote additional songs for Quadrophenia initially, which didn't make the recording sessions, or which were recorded but dropped from the final master.
The album as it stands on the record is pretty much precisely what I wrote. There were 3 or 4 other strands which were meant to be interconnecting themes. There were a couple of... they were kind of interludes to lighten the piece. In the end, they weren't included because of lack of time on the record. And a couple of them were developed as complete songs for the album which accompanied the movie later on, as it were, bonus tracks. But those songs were not completed as songs at the time that the original record was made. One of them was called Four Faces. Another one was called Get Out and Stay Out. There were several, anyway, of that order. Small snippets that became songs later, but what you hear is what I wrote. I think I went in with an album worth of demos, and we stuck pretty much closely to my formula. I think that's probably why this is the only Who album on which there aren't any John Entwistle compositions. I wrote the thing on paper before we went in, and there was just no room for anything else. The remix version is great because I think that in the remix, what you actually hear is how well The Who played on that record, particularly how well Roger sung on the record, which maybe didn't come across on the mix that I did. I was exhausted by the time I got to mix the record, and I think my ears were probably shot and I didn't do as good a job as I should have done. But certainly this remix does the project justice, I think, and which is identical to the original, except that it's completely remixed. It's but the way it should have sounded when it first emerged. So if you're a fan of Quadrophenia and you've already got possibly a number of different versions of it, I do urge you to get this version because it's the way I, as the original producer of the album, intended it to be heard.
Reveals all he did.
From The Who's fall 1973 album Quadrophenia, that's Roger Daltrey on vocal with The Dirty Jobs, which in mid-60s England, only a young man such as Jimmy the Mod could find. Roger Daltrey admits that even though The Who received rave reviews for their artful use of synthesizer throughout Quadrophenia, the technology had not evolved sufficiently for concerts by 1973.
The biggest problem we had with Quadrophenia was working with... In those days, we didn't have... Synthesizers were in their very, very early stages, and the technology was non-existent to kind of carry that thing around, to put it on stage. We experimented working with quadraphonic sound, which was interesting but not very successful. To work with tapes on the Quadrophenia sections really did limit the show, because once the tape was started, you were stuck into playing within that envelope. And previous to that, The Who had always been very, very much a free-form band. It's almost jazzy, in a way. I mean, things would literally grow block by block. But once you started that tape, you had to play with that tape until it finished, and then you could do what you liked, if you still had any brain left. And it was a really big problem. And it was a big problem for me, because from where I stood on the stage, I could never hear the damn tape anyway. It was all... even Keith had to wear earphones. It was a nightmare.
Even as the creative output of The Who was at an all-time high, internal problems with the band's management over missing money created tension, which finally boiled over near the end of recording Quadrophenia and the subsequent tour rehearsals, according to Pete Townsend.
The band played fantastically well, I think, on that record. We really did, and we had a good time. We were having fun at that time. It was sad that it ended the way it ended, because it did end quite sadly. It ended with, you know, with a fist fight with Roger and I in rehearsal, with tremendous stress, the first concerts failing, with me having arguments with sound men. I think I even hit one of them. It was very, very frustrating, because what was promised was a monumental concert experience, and what we actually experienced was we ended up playing three of the songs from the record on our tour, and... we lost it, basically, and it's one of the great joys for me. I don't know about everybody else, but the great joy for me was getting it all back again.
I wear my wartime coat in the winter sleeve. mountain. Be so nice on the outside, but inside keep ambition. Don't cry because you hunt them. Hurt them first, they'll love you. There's a millionaire above you. Ride a GS scooter with my haircut neat. I wear my wartime coat in the wind and sleet.
Love, rain on me.
Coming up here next week, on this same day and time, Pete Townsend returns with me in the studio for the conclusion of the story of Quadrophenia. But you can hear exclusive live performances of Quadrophenia right now at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard, back after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests Pete Townsend and Roger Daltrey, who will return again next week for part two. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2018, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brune. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.